Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week, this is pretty exciting, from the headquarters of our new garage franchise here at Car Talk Plaza.
Now, we're in business?
I think this is going to be really big. This is going to be a national chain of fix-it shops.
Yeah.
Designed to inspire the kind of confidence that only we can inspire.
What are we calling this chain?
Kevorkian Motors. Hey, don't forget, folks. Next week, we will be choosing a winner of our Symphony Hall contest.
Yes, that's correct.
In which one lucky listener and three guests will win an almost all-expense-paid trip, define almost, to our fair city to see us make fools of ourselves at Symphony Hall, so be sure not to miss that.
So they should, like, stay tuned. This is a ploy for getting people to not change the station?
Yeah, because...
That's right. I mean, they could win something.
Yeah.
Win.
Yeah, a free trip. Anyway... I know you don't have any great mail to read because I saw you moaning and groaning and crying in the green
room.
It's
so, you know, actually what happens, this happens every year when we are offering something free, like this contest.
People
spend all their efforts on entering the contest and no one takes the time to write letters to us that I could read and chuckle over.
Well, next week it'll all be over and then people can resume. Writing those ridiculous letters.
It's a sad commentary on our listeners, I think.
They haven't got
enough
time.
It's so materialistic. All they're worried about is winning something, getting something for free. Ask not what you can get from Car Talk. Ask what you can do to save this show from
from ruin.
Ruin that it's headed for, as you can see now.
Anyway, if you have a question about your car, you can call us at 1-800-332-9287. Are you ready, Tommy, to do battle?
Boy, am I ever. I've got more answers than there are questions.
Let's see. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
My name's Lisa. I'm from Columbia, Missouri.
Hi, Lisa. Columbia, Missouri. I got it. What's up, Lisa?
Well, I have a Chevy Nova 86.
Wow.
I love my car.
Yeah?
But it's been doing a very weird thing, and it's kind of sporadic. Like, it first happened in February, and it only happens, like, every couple of weeks or once a month.
Yeah.
But when I'm driving, like, I might be driving all day, and I'll stop at a light. And then when I go into first, it, like, doesn't engage. I just, like, press down the pedal. I can shift into second or even third, and it just sort of, like, revs and just, you know.
Even in second and third, all the gears?
Actually, if I press down the gas hard enough and shift it up into third and then fourth, it picks up. But basically, in first and second and stuff, it just goes like 5 miles an hour and revs really high and doesn't...
Oh, Lisa.
Well, no, but it only happens like once, like, and if you turn the car off and just leave it for a while, it goes away and doesn't happen again.
Well, like 6 months? Oh, you must have 92,000 miles in this car.
No, I have just 60.
60? Wait a minute. See? If we were clever, we would have figured this out before she even told us any more. She said, she gave us a clue.
I'm still working on Columbia, Missouri.
She gave us a clue and we didn't even hear it. Except I'm sharp today. She said, this is my first car.
Mm-hmm. I can drive it.
You cannot.
Oh, but it happened. No, it happened when my friend was driving it too, just the other day.
I know. It happened when your friend was driving it the other day. But you're the one who wrecked it. Now, what you need is a clutch.
Well, because I brought it in, and they told me it wasn't a clutch, and then I brought it to this transmission guy, and they told me I was crazy, and then I.
Well, that might have been true.
Well, are you sure that when you're putting it into first or second gear, that you're actually putting it into gear completely?
Yeah.
Isn't it possible?
The car is moving. She gets the car to move.
Well, I mean, I drove it all the way to Texas and back, and nothing happened, and then just the other day it happened.
No, let me get this correct.
Okay.
You stopped at a light. The light turns green. You step on the clutch, you put the shifter into first, you let the clutch out, the clutch feels normal.
Uh-huh.
Am I with me so far?
Yeah.
Am I with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've let the clutch out, it feels normal, but the car doesn't move.
It moves a little.
It moves a little, But the engine revs up considerably.
You step on the gas, and the engine goes, and the car only goes 3, 4, 5 miles an hour.
Exactly.
Yeah. You need a clutch.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Explain to me, then, how it fixes itself.
It happened the first time in February.
Hmm. If she needed a, if it was that dramatic, the failure of the clutch was that dramatic, she wouldn't have been able to drive it another 2 weeks.
No, what? Yeah, exactly.
I contend.
You contend what?
I contend that the fault was in the shifter, that the thing is not actually going into gear. You're missing the gears. Not
you
missing
think
them.
So.
I mean, you're not missing them, but the transmission is missing the gears.
Gee, and if that were true, explain to me why it doesn't go.
Well, if when this is next time this does this, Lisa.
Yeah.
Take the shifter and
you got us fighting with each other now.
I'm gonna kill him any minute. The next time this happens, try putting it further into first gear or taking it out and just slamming it into first. And I bet you're gonna find out that that's gonna fix it.
Wait. And it also happens when she's in second?
Yeah. Because the last time I had it, I got really mad. So I put it to first and then second what? And then third and I floored it.
How about fourth?
And when I put it in third and, like, had the pedal to the floor, it kind of picked up.
All right.
It revved really high, and then it took off.
Look, help me
And then
this.
It took right off.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Geez, help me with this.
Wait a minute.
We know she needs a clutch.
No, we don't.
So help me with why does it happen sometimes?
And then we turned off the car, parked it for an hour, came back, nothing.
I mean, it was fine.
It was fine. It's fine. It's been fine.
I have it.
I have it, too.
Good.
You know what? You know what's wrong with this car?
Yeah, I do now.
I'll bet you a nickel you don't have the same idea that I got.
No, but I know what the answer is.
I'm dying with anticipation.
How's this?
Okay.
How's this? I'm stretching now. I'll admit this. She's got any day now, this clutch is going to fail completely. Are you with me?
Could be, yeah.
It's going to fail completely because...
That fits into the context
into
of my theory.
Think?
Yeah.
What's wrong with it is the fork.
Mm.
Huh?
Jeez, I hate to say it, Lisa, but I happen to agree with the knucklehead.
See, once you agreed that it was the clutch, then you searched for a way to explain why it's the clutch.
Yeah.
And it's the fork.
What's happening is the release bearing is not releasing all the way. Even though you're taking your foot off the pedal, what's happening is the release bearing, which is the thing responsible for disengaging the clutch, is not sliding all the way back away from the clutch. So it's
stuck.
It's the equivalent of having your foot still down on the clutch, yet in first gear, and stepping on the gas. What would happen if you took your foot like a half an inch off the floor and tried to drive away?
It would do exactly this.
That's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah.
So we think the release bearing is hanging up. That's what's happening.
Take it back to the mechanic and tell him to check this hypothesis, and he will find out, my God, those guys figured this out. On the radio?
I'm going to ask him for my $35 back.
And, yeah.
And
send us
$5 of it. My brother will send you $35.
That's what it is.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
This means I need a whole new clutch?
If you're going to do it, Lisa, have the whole clutch replaced.
Especially the way you drive.
No, because you're going to spend four-fifths of what it costs for a new clutch. You might as well benefit from a new one.
Oh, okay.
Put a whole new one.
How many miles did you say? 60-ish?
60, and I bought it used, and I think it's the original clutch.
Oh, yeah. I would say go for the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Bye.
See you, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we've got more calls, and ready for this? The puzzler ads are coming up right after this, so don't go anywhere. This message comes from NPR sponsor eBay Motors. We all know that feeling of finding yourself stuck on the side of the road, but now you can avoid that pain by getting your vehicle the parts it needs before that breakdown, oh no, moment. With eBay Guaranteed Fit and over 122 million parts and accessories, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Just look for the green check. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices. ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, it's time for last week's puzzle, which, as you probably don't remember, had to do with one of your favorite things to do.
Drinking coffee. Did it?
Exactly. Here it is. Here's the scenario.
I can't remember.
It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You're getting up and getting ready to go to work.
No, I get up considerably before that.
Yes, to put the coffee
11.
On.
11. You're going to make the coffee. You're going to drink it.
And anyway, you made
go on
yourself
the Nordic track.
A boiling pot of coffee. And I think, as I explained last week, my brother still uses the old-fashioned percolator to make his coffee. You know, that's the one that you heat right up on the stove and it goes bloop, 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 bloop.
Yeah.
You still use that thing, huh?
It's the only way to make coffee.
Anyway, as soon as it finishes its last perk, you immediately remove it from the stove. And as it's still boiling, you pour yourself a cup of coffee. Now, it's probably like 210 degrees, this coffee, at this point. And you realize it's too hot to drink. But as luck would have it, you find yourself.
Can you say this delicately?
You find yourself in urgent need of a shave.
Oh.
Now, here's the dilemma.
You got the room correct.
Here's the crux of the question. You would like to cool the coffee as much as possible during those 5 minutes that you're in the bathroom having a shave, okay?
Yeah.
And fortunately, you happen to like cream in your coffee, so you take the cream out of the refrigerator and you put it down on the counter, and there you have these two items, 210-degree coffee, nearly boiling, and 40-degree cream. You got the scenario now? Is it all? Am I painting the picture?
Yes, you're exactly right.
Now, to get the coolest coffee in 5 minutes, do you A, pour the cream into the coffee before you go for your shave and let the mixture cool down together, okay?
Yeah.
Or
B,
two, do you let them sit on the counter separately and then add the cream when you finished your shave?
And you come back, and there they are, and you boom, you pour the cream in, and then you drink it. Under which circumstances will it be cooler is the
right
question.
And the answer is?
The answer is? I know the answer.
You
this
wait.
This is a great, these are the kinds of, you know what we should do for a living? We should teach science.
I have a
in
job. I was, I've been
grade
wondering what you're going to do for a living.
In the seventh grade science teacher.
I taught seventh grade science.
Did you?
Yes, I did. I taught seventh grade science. And I must say.
Yeah.
I hated those. No, seventh grade kids are just at the right age where you can tell them anything. They believed everything.
Yeah.
You know, they were impressionable.
Did you make up theories as you went?
Oh, and I didn't really know them, of course. I mean, you have
so
no choice.
So there's a whole room full of Vermont seventh grade kids who believe things like nuclear winter,
roof snow
global
theory,
global warming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
roof snow theory.
Yeah, I had them all.
You had them all.
Yeah, they're all in the state penitentiary now.
Was Carl Sagan in that class?
He was. No, anyway, the reason you add the cream last is that in order to get the fastest cooling, you want the greatest temperature difference between the hot stuff and the cold stuff, which is the air.
The room, yeah.
The room. And, of course, by making the mixture early, you lower the temperature and you reduce the rate.
By making the mixture early?
Making the mixture early on.
Yes.
You lower the temperature somewhat, but you reduce the overall cooling effect because you have lowered the temperature enough to make that difference smaller.
The delta.
The
delta,
delta
T.
Delta T, exactly.
And heat travels at the rate of delta T.
And, of course, if you add the cream early, the temperature difference won't be the greatest. Okay?
Exactly.
Because you will have cooled it somewhat, and the rate of descent will be smaller.
Hmm.
So the outcome will be unsatisfactory if you add the cream early.
That you'd notice.
Not that I'd notice, because I don't put cream in my coffee.
That fussy.
Do we have a winner?
Yeah. Ah, fine Italian lass. Rose Mary O'Brien from Rutherford, New Jersey is
really
the winner. Yeah. And, of course, she will win, as usual, one of the following fabulous prizes.
Right, the two-week trip to Monaco.
Two-week trip to Monaco. Or the doggy dish with our pictures in it to keep your dog from getting fat because they puke every time they look and see our faces. Or, what are we doing? What are we doing this now? We're not doing hats anymore?
No, thank God.
Oh, we're doing the car talk. Car talk, roadside assistance package. Car talk roadside assistance package filled with lots of things that will keep you busy while you're waiting for the tow truck. Rosemary, one of those magnificent prizes will definitely be yours.
Anyway, we have a new puzzler coming up, so stay tuned for that. And don't forget that next week on this very show, we will be choosing, in our inimitable style, the winner of the Car Talk Symphony Hall contest. So you can turn this off now and you won't miss a thing, but make sure you listen next week, because next week we're going to pick the winner. Okay? 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Michelle from Sioux City, Iowa.
How are you doing, Michelle?
I'm just doing very well, and you?
Well, not as good as you probably, but all right.
So what's up, Michelle?
Well, I tell you, I have this Chevrolet Cavalier 1990.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was driving down the boulevard one day, 20, 30 miles an hour, and this Cavalier made a very loud, screaming noise. And it frightened me so much, I drove to a service station right away.
Uh-huh.
And took the mechanic for a road test, And we both heard this raspy, grating noise whenever the engine's under load, especially when I go uphill. And we can't seem to identify it, and I still have it, and that's been some months ago now.
It came on all of a sudden.
It made a loud noise.
Could you do this? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I don't know if I can do the loud one.
The loud noise that it made is somewhat different from the noise it's making now?
Very much louder than what it's doing now.
Okay, so it made a real loud noise, and now you've got like a
was it like a screeching?
It goes like that. Especially when I go uphill. Whenever the engine's under load. Now, if you want a little more history, I can take you back.
Anything that'll kill time.
Okay. You sound like my student.
You can give us your own personal history. The car doesn't matter. We just have to ponder.
All right. In late January, the car was missing. I couldn't get up over 25 miles an hour. I took it in, and the distributor module was replaced. Then a week later, I complained of a fluttering noise that I hadn't noticed before, and I understand that that's normal for this car design, but I also complained of a squawking noise.
Squawking?
That the car made when it went over bumps.
Squawking?
Squawking, sort of like the spring.
So you have fluttering?
We have fluttering, squawking.
Squawking
first, squawking different. And they
sounds like an aviary.
The inner tie rod ends.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with anything. They had a boat payment, too. Fluttering, squawking, what else we got? Now we have screeching.
And now we got...
Screeching it was the big one.
Yeah.
And that was in March, I would say, February or March.
And now what's the new...
It's still making this raspy, grating noise.
Okay, so fluttering, squawking, squeaking, rasping.
Right.
Now, this happens only when your foot is on the gas, huh?
Correct.
So if you're going fast, but you're going down a hill, no noise.
No noise.
If you're stepping on the brake, no noise.
No noise.
Only when you gas.
I mean, are you taking it to just this one guy?
No, I've had three different mechanics ride with me. They all hear it, but nobody knows what's the matter.
Has anyone tried to reproduce it in the shop? You have an automatic transmission?
Yes.
Gee, I mean, the way we reproduce stuff like this in the shop is we load up the engine. That is, you put the thing in drive. You plant your left foot on the brake and your right foot on the gas, unless you happen to be left-handed, in which case you put your right foot on the brake and your left foot on the gas, and you give it gas as if you're trying to drive away, but you're restraining the car by stepping on the brake, but you're simulating, to some extent,
load
condition. You're making the car think, the engine think it's trying to climb a hill.
I don't know that any of them have tried that.
Oh, I mean, that's a standard test.
Yeah, I mean, they would certainly have to do that.
And they would probably get the noise. I mean, I think... It could be something as benign as a bad motor mount and perhaps your exhaust hitting the undercarriage of the car, even, or hitting something that it shouldn't be hitting, making this squeaking, grasping, rasping.
We're up to rasping.
Noise. That could be one of the simpler things, or it could be that they're all tied together and somehow or another your transmission, especially the torque converter, is starting to give up the ghost.
Oh.
Could be.
And it could be something simple like the basic heat shield rattle.
It could be a heat shield.
Is it this noise?
Oh, I've got the fluttering and the raspy noise now, yes? Kind of like that.
But it's the fluttering.
Uh-huh.
But do that at the same time. Do the rasping.
Right.
Is that it?
You're better at it than the car, isn't
it? Is that it?
Yes, that's close.
We have no idea what it is.
I mean, it also could be something as simple as one of the bolts that goes through the flex plate and holds that onto the torque converter could be loose. I mean, these guys they've got to do more than just drive around the block with you. I mean, they're doing what we're trying to do.
Okay.
They're trying to hear the noise and figure it out. They've got to crawl underneath the car and put it on the lift and look at stuff.
All right.
And... they will stand underneath there, and they will be able in a minute to figure out where that noise is coming from. I mean, you got to be able to tell, is it coming from the bottom of the engine, the top of the engine, the transmission, who knows? And because there are many, many things that could make sounds like this.
I see.
I mean, the fan could be hitting something.
Yeah, if only it had a fan. It doesn't have a fan, but if it had one, it would be hitting.
It would be hitting.
Good luck, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Doesn't it have a fan?
Well, it does, but it has an electric fan.
It's electric? How do they do that? How do they get wires that long?
Don't move, because more calls and the new puzzler are coming right up.
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to try to answer your questions about cars, car repair, and the Tower of Power.
The Tower of Power is J.D. Power and Associates and Company, or whatever they are.
And everyone knows them. They're always quoted in car ads. J.D. Power rated us,
Right, because they're the guys who do the surveys and the studies of who likes cars and which cars are
good. And for whom do they do these surveys and studies?
For whoever wants to pay.
Well, who would that be?
That would be the automotive companies.
Okay.
And everyone associated with the automotive. In fact, I mean, we used to subscribe to a newsletter that they print, but they wanted an outrageous amount of money for it.
And we couldn't talk them into giving it to us for free, so...
So now we're going to dump on them instead. Well, I mean, we've ingratiated ourselves to everyone in Detroit, so we might as well spread out a little bit and go to California. And
why not?
Last week, people may have read in the newspaper, released to the press, I guess I should say. They released to the press the list of cars that rated highest in what they call the initial quality survey. And what they do is they list the number of problems per 100 new cars sold, so that the cars with the fewest number of problems rate the highest. And of course, as we know, here I got the list in front of me. The car that rated the highest is the Lexus LS400. It had 32 problems per 100 cars. So it's 0.3 problems per car. That's pretty good. And next is another Lexus. Stuck in the middle there is a Geo Prism. Interesting. Mm. Huh? And then an Acura Legend, an Infiniti. You know, all these Japanese are all Japanese cars.
Oh, I hadn't noticed. I'm sorry.
A Geo Prism. All Japanese cars until you get down to the Mercury Grand Marquis. Not bad.
No.
And then the Toyota Camry.
Well, they've only been making that car for about 75 years. You figure they ought to have it figured out by now.
Right.
Yeah.
And now at this point, we're up to like 60 problems per 100 cars. Then we're back to Toyota, Lexus, Lincoln, town car.
Making that car for 62 years.
And then Toyota, Nissan, then Buick. And then Saturn, and then Toyota, and the Ford Crown Vic, and so forth.
So get to the point.
Well, this was an interesting list, I thought. But I was wondering, what's on the bottom of the list? I mean, these are all cars which are better than average, right?
Yes.
I wondered which cars are worse than average. I mean, wouldn't you like to know what cars are on the bottom of the list just so you wouldn't buy it? I mean, wouldn't you like to know what the bottom 10 were? Except J.D. Power.
I know what the bottom 10 are.
J.D. Power does not release that information to anybody except to the people whose cars are being made and are on the bottom.
Mm.
So I thought that was kind of...
So you're suggesting that if they release this information that they'll upgrade their quality, so it would be kind of an incentive for them to improve the quality of their car.
No, I mean, I just want to know so I make sure I don't buy one of those dogs.
I don't think you're going to buy one, no matter what.
I'm not buying a car anyway.
I know that.
Well, I don't think it's fair that they don't... If they're going to make a big to-do about the list, make a big to-do about the bottom of the list as well. Either give us the whole damn list, all 631 cars, or don't give us any. Well, I'm not going to publish it anymore in my newsletter.
I think they're at liberty to give any portion of the list they please.
Well,
whose list
fine.
Is it? Did you pay them to make the list? Just keep your mouth shut and mind your own business. Crybaby.
All right.
It's time for the new puzzler. Remember last winter? Let me refresh your memory. Long underwear.
Oh.
Three pairs of pants, four shirts.
What do you mean last winter? That was last week. Yeah, remember it.
I remember sometime during the middle of the winter, when winter was at its coldest. Now,
your shoulders are permanently affixed to your earlobes because you can't get cold warm enough.
You're frozen in the mechanic's shrug.
Right.
Well, my next door neighbor, Frank, figures out that after about 3 months of winter, he figures out his car has no heat. He keeps putting on more layers of clothing.
He's quick, Frank.
And he asked me what the problem could be. And I said, geez, I don't know. But I said, I suppose you could be out of coolant. He's, no, I checked that. I've got plenty of coolant. I said, well, your heater core could be plugged up. Gee, I don't think so. And we finally come to the conclusion that he needs a thermostat.
Sure, why not? Cheap.
So he asks me to help him, and I tell him I have to go to a seat cover convention, and I can't help, and he's on his own. So there he is in his dryer, and it's cold. Oh, man, was it cold that day?
Day after day, week after week.
So there he is in the driveway, and I see him because I'm hiding behind the drapes. Watch. And I'm watching him, and I watch as one finger after another falls off. Anyway, he puts the thermostat in. And now, I guess most people don't realize this, but once you do this, you have to refill the cooling system because you lose most of it when you put the thermostat in. And then you have to run the engine and get the coolant to circulate so you get all the air out.
Yeah.
So he's doing this, in fact. He's out there running the thing. And hours go by, but it starts getting dark. And I realize that he's not finished because I can see the smoke coming out the tailpipe. So he comes and he rings my bell.
He knows you're there.
I don't answer the door. I pry open that little slot that the mailman puts the letters in.
He's in the home now. Raymond, he's in the home.
No, and I barked at him like the dog.
Yeah, he says, Raymond, come out, you dog. Come out like a man, you dog.
And he asks me what could be wrong.
Yeah.
And I said, beats me. No, so he asked me what could be wrong, and I look over at his car, and he's got it running, and I guess because he was afraid to lock the keys in the car, he had left the window open.
Yeah.
And I said to him, roll up the window.
Excellent.
You'll be all set.
Excellent.
And I immediately ran out the back door, jumped the fence, and that solved his problem.
That's very good. Simple, but good.
So the question is, very simply, why did I tell him to close the window
of
his car?
You were cold. Oh, the window to his car.
To his car. If you think you know the answer,
yeah,
send it on a postcard or preferably the back of a $20 bill or larger to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Massachusetts, 02238. And by the way, if you have a wonderful puzzler.
Yeah.
Or even a crummy one, if you think we can use it somehow, send it to that same address and we will find it and use it maybe and give you public recognition and acclaim for it.
Do answers and questions come into Puzzler Tower?
Our staff
How
is prepared
is the staff?
To sort.
You mean they can tell an answer from a question?
Only when we give the question and ask the answer. Our staff can figure it out. If you have a potential puzzler, you can write PP on the bottom left-hand corner
PP
of the envelope. And yeah. We'll figure it out. Anyway, if you'd like to call us with a question about your car, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Richard.
Hi, I'm Richard.
Calling from Salem, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
It's nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you. Salem, I like Salem very much. Salem's a cute town.
It's a great city.
Yes, home of the House of Seven Gables.
Yes, there was Clark. Who else?
What are Clark the, Gable.
Greta Gable.
Betty Grable. Betty Grable.
What's up, Richard?
Well, my wife has a new Honda Accord.
Uh-huh.
It's a great car. She got it at the end of January.
Yeah.
And occasionally I get to drive it. But there's a bit of a shocking twist. We each have noted that on occasion we'll get little electrical shocks, maybe when we get out of the car or are getting into it.
Yeah. Do you wear leisure suits, Richard?
No polyester.
Oh, just checking.
Do you have enough fiber in your diet? I mean, now you may find this hard to believe, but I'm sure there's a connection here someplace.
Yeah, well, there could be.
Because everything stems back to diet.
Yeah, you are what you eat.
Indeed.
Well, you could be right, but I'll tell you what happened. We didn't think too much of it until my wife was driving over the Tobin Bridge, and she gave her 50 cents to the toll taker, and he jumped back with a shock, saying, ouch.
Really?
He looked at the car. He said, oh, you have a new Accord. They all do that.
Ooh.
Boy, he would know, wouldn't he?
Yes, he would.
I can just see them now. Just put the money on the ground.
He probably doesn't it through the mail slot. Put the money on the ground. So it's a haunt. He says, you have one of those new Accords. They all do that.
They all do that. And I thought this was a pretty interesting observation from somebody who ought to know.
He probably gets knocked down with a shock 20, 30 times a day.
Right? Yeah, anyone's going to learn it after a while.
After a while. Well, I mean, what causes, I mean, it, even when she's driving, not even getting out of the car, huh?
Right.
I mean, that's, as we know, for if you were a seventh grade science teacher, as my brother was, you would know that this is a case of static electricity, mm-hmm. right? It must have to do, then, with what Honda is using for seat cover material.
I rather doubt it.
Seems strange, doesn't it? I mean, that's typically what the cause is. I mean, where do you get the static electricity? It's between you and the seat. And if all of them do it, we have to assume that all the people who drive Hondas don't wear the same clothing.
You have fabric seats?
They are fabric. Mm. I thought it was not static electricity. I thought somehow there was a tiny little leak from the very complex electrical system.
Oh, leaking through the steering wheel into your fingers.
Or someplace.
Are you in the arts, Richard?
No.
I'd like to be.
No, Richard's a scientist.
Kind of.
You are?
Kind of.
What school of science did you go to?
I went to medical school.
Oh, that kind of science.
Mm. That counts.
That counts.
That's good. That's good. You have good credentials, Richard.
That's good. But, I mean, it's unlikely that electricity, real electricity, could leak through from something in the car into a person. That's really unlikely.
Yeah, because the only electricity in the car with enough potential to get into you, enough voltage, is the secondary ignition system. Everything else is 12 volts.
Yeah, and that's 5 or 6 feet away from you. And 12 volts won't do nothing to anybody.
Well,
so it's
no, it
got
can,
to be the seats. It's got to be the seats.
Yeah, I think it's fabric. Has she tried? This happened with all kinds of different outfits.
It doesn't seem to happen all of the time.
Yeah, you're gonna.
I've got it. You may have to drive this car buck naked.
That's right.
You have to try some night, Richard. You have to try it. Put on like your dungaree jacket, and that's it.
In fact, I was just reading before we went on the air this book by Jay Leno, Headlines. He writes these little books of weird headlines. I can see it now. Prominent Salem physician found buck naked on Tobin Bridge.
But I do think you have to, in the interest of science, you have to experiment with different kinds of clothing to see if somehow or another you're building up a charge. And it may be, I bet you if you call the Honda dealer, they have some kind of a fix for this. Because if you have this problem, hundreds of other people, and of course we know hundreds of other people have it, because this toll taker is getting knocked on his butt 4 or 5 times a day.
Yeah.
And they must have some kind of a fix.
I'll bet you they
don't. Static guard.
That's it.
I mean, I would try that. I would try spraying that on the seat of your pants.
Just spray it right on the seat. No, that stuff really does work. The same stuff that you use so that your slip won't bunch up on you, that mine always does.
Oh, it's so embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. If you spray that on the seat, I bet you the shock goes away. But I would try the buck naked technique.
I would try that first, and that will certainly verify the theory. Richard, you've been a good sport.
Give it a try, and I enjoy your show, and it's nice talking to you.
Hey, Richard, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I think I sensed that Richard was a little disappointed, that he was expecting a succinct, concise, erudite,
but we did.
Well-conceived, thought-out, we don't drive around naked. That's going to fix your problem. Well, you've done it again, haven't you? You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug Berman. Our associate producer and dean of the College of Auto Musicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer this week is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb.
Who?
This week, I might add.
Oh, yeah.
We got a bad look from her. Not as bad as this one's going to be. Our technical advisor, who was recently listed in the 1994 Who's Who and Free Lunch, is John Bugsy Sebastian, Mr. Height, Sweet Cheeks, Lunchosaurus, Twinkle Toes, Donut Breath, Make That 2 Triple Cheeseburgers, Lawler. Don't you love the way that just...
It's mellifluous.
Flows off
else.
The tongue.
Yeah.
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Our fleet manager, of course, is Oscar De La Renta. Our literary critics are Ernest and Julia Hemingway. Our corporate surgeon general is C. Everett Coupe DeVille. Our staff composer is Gustav Muffler. Our liaison officer to Volvo and Renault Motor Companies is Bjorn Toulouse. Our staff marriage counselor is Marion Haste. Our wardrobe is by Natalie Attired. The president of the Car Talk Hair Club for Men is Emerson Fittibaldi, who, by the way, is also a client. And, of course, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known around town as Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Thanks for listening, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And here at its low point for the week, this is NPR, National Public Radio.